Hello and welcome back, regular listeners. If you're joining us for the first time, thank you for tuning in. This is Red Eyes Radio. My name is Henrik, and the website is redeyescreations.com. Well, today we're speaking with Sofia Smallstorm about the issues of grants as a mechanism of transformation and moving us into Agenda 21 and the wonderful future that they have planned for us all. Smallstorm is known for the documentaries 9/11 Mysteries and Unraveling Sandy Hook. She's also recognized for her research on the connection between geoengineering and synthetic biology. We'll talk about the future vision that, I guess we could call them the Transformers have for us. Stay tuned. Welcome back, Sofia. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
Henrik, I am grateful. As I said to you, I love coming back on your show, not for egotistical reasons, but I think you're so good at what you do. You're so deep. You're so you're so well educated yourself. It's a pleasure to do interviews with you.
Well, thank you. I'm blushing over here now. It's nice of you to say. and it's great to have people like you on the show, Sofia, to of course help us unravel all the things that we try to get to the bottom of on this show. And, you know, you contacted me a while back and we spoke a bit, a couple of weeks ago off air and spoke a bit about doing a show on this particular topic that we're going to get into. And I think kind of to set the framework for some of what we'll talk about later, we're going to try to understand and deconstruct the background to where the money is coming from to pay for the migrant invasion into Europe and into America as well. And also why this is happening. It's really kind of one component of what we'll be talking about as well. But this is to me a very interesting one. And you know that we've been extremely concerned with what we've seen in the last year or so in Europe that is bringing these military fighting men into the West en masse. And there's been a tremendous cost involved in this. And the changes, of course, that this is having on a societal level, the impacts are just impossible to fathom. There's rapes and crimes and stabbings and violence. There is increase in illicit drugs and prostitutions and all kinds of things that's occurring right now. We actually had a report from Sweden coming out saying that the 2015 migrant crisis is actually costing Sweden 14 times the country's defense budget. So sure, they have downscaled on that, but it means there is tremendous amount of money, 583 million crowns it has cost them so far. So anyway, there's a lot of components to this that we're going to kind of try to connect, but we're going to begin in a different end, which basically is to show a bit when it comes to the corporate structure, the incorporation of government system, and kind of the grants that has enabled some of this. So take us back, Sofia, and begin at the right end here so that we can understand how we should put this in context first.
Sure. Okay, so I'll just take you on the path that I went on myself. I had heard, as many of us have, that the United States of America was a corporation, and, what does that really mean? To me, I never understood the profundity of it until I put it together with Agenda 21 and the formation of the New World Order, and I had help from other people. So let's just start with America, because what happened in America has now taken place all over the world. So back in 1871, between 1869 and 71, the United States of America was incorporated. The federal government became a corporation, as did this thing, Washington District of Columbia. And that is the mother corporation of this federal corporation franchise system. The federal corporation, I'll repeat, is the mothership of this incredibly huge hierarchy now, because that has been established slowly, year by year. All the cities, towns, agencies, local agencies like the local EPA, the big EPA, the central one, the FEMA, Department of Homeland Security, your town water district, your school district, police departments, they're all incorporated now. And why was this done? It was sold to the individuals who were employed by and participating in these various agencies and towns and city councils and whatnot, mayors, governors, as a protective mechanism. It would, you know, separate you and your personal assets from your job. So if somebody tripped and fell in your city, they wouldn't take your house as the mayor. They would sue the city, and the city would have its attorneys and its defense and everything lined up and its money to pay for any damages or injury or whatnot. So everybody accepted this and decided it is a good idea. But what it has done in philosophy is it has separated the separated out any interest that any of these incorporated entities have in truly working for the public, representing public interest. They're not representative government any longer. They're now corporate government. So what is that? Corporate government is simply corporations. Corporations are organizations on paper. They are bound by contracts, by rules and regulations that they each create. And everyone who's involved with them is either an employee of the corporation or an officer of the corporation. So your city council, they're all corporate officers. The guy who shovels the snow when there's a blizzard on the street, who's a city worker, he is an employee of a corporation. So now you have to ask yourself, what do these corporations do? They don't represent the public anymore. They simply do contracts. They exist in order to create contracts and perform by contract, which is all commercial interaction. So they're doing business by and through contracts. And what is business? Business is all about money. So that's when I started to see that and understand that the money that was flowing into these corporations and out of them was actually building the world we're living in by the Agenda 21 handbook. This whole immigration flood is paid for by federal grants. The federal government borrows money from the banks. It's no secret. These governments are all trillions in debt, especially the United States. They just borrow and borrow and borrow and borrow. And then they turn around and they offer these federal corporate grants to all the sub-corporations lined up underneath them. So they'll offer grants to the state, the different states, educational, Common Core is all paid for by corporate grant contracts from the federal government. They will offer to the towns and cities to build the high-speed rail, fancy train stations, the community parks, which will be all that we have to enjoy when our private homes and backyards disappear. So the cities make applications for grants. They're given a glossy summary by their city manager. The federal government makes it known that grants are available for this, that, the other thing. Who wants to be the first in your state to have this kind of train station or this kind of school curriculum or Wi-Fi in the schools? And all the cities and towns, they jump up and down and they compete for these grants. And once the grant is approved, the money is paid, the contract is written, all that can happen is those requirements, those contractual requirements now have to be implemented and met. And usually the public learns way too late that these changes are taking place. This is going to come into their town or city or area. And by then the monies have been exchanged and they can't do anything about it. So the bankers throw whatever money they want, which of course we know is digital money, at the governments, who in turn throw them at the towns and cities, who in turn accept them because everyone wants a federal contract. Federal contracts are lush, they pay very well, and nobody thinks about the, you know, morality and ethics of doing whatever they're doing because everybody is desperate on the lower levels of the pyramid, which is our level. You and me, our brothers and sisters who are building the housing projects to take in all the immigration, who are building the community parks, who are redoing the roads in all the cities, who are to, you know, become bike lanes in the future, because Agenda 21 will all be about bikes. So this borrowed money is what's paying for the changes we're seeing. These are New World Order changes, humanity 2.0 changes, the cross-pollination of cultures, of races, of populations, the population dislocation, the population exchange is all being paid for by grants.
All right, let's see if we can tie that together. I'll ask you more about the immigration issue directly later, how that kind of fits into this. But does anybody end up in debt due to these grants? Like, is that a, if the banks throw this money at the government, do they owe anything in return?
Well, the governments borrow the money, as I understand it, and the governments are therefore in debt. The grants that are paid out usually cover the projects. And this is where I was able to reframe the whole meaning of this CAFR. People have heard that cities like Stockton, California, you know, whimpering and moaning about how bankrupt they are. You look in what's called the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, which is no secret. Every city has one. You see, it's brimming with money, millions of dollars. So I was lucky enough to find out from someone that I know who has had a position high in one of the government agencies, local agencies. I asked, well, do you know what a CAFR is? And she said, of course I know what a CAFR is. And she explained to me how the CAFR works. So let's just say that your city wants to build a community park. It's applied for a grant. It wants to have a, you know, huge skate park, two or three aquatic pools, competition pools, splash pad, picnic tables. What else do they have there? Oh, ballparks, dog parks. So it wants a facility like this. And this costs, you know, tens of millions of dollars. So city blah, blah, blah gets approved for it. The grant is paid. The money is paid. Now the city can do another creative thing. It's got this money. It can invest the money if it wants to. It can try to enlarge the amount of money. It can try to build the project on the cheap. Then it can pad the pensions of the city council members with the surplus. So incorporation offers you a lot of creative abilities that only, you know, that a public entity wouldn't be able to do. So we have the situation where grant monies are paid. Then those monies have to be sequestered. They have to be put in reserve, because as you're going to build this enormous community park, it may take 10 years. So you're not going to be turning around and saying, okay, where's the money to write such and such checks for? Because we've got such and such contractor ready to put in such and such. So that money has to be put in reserve. And that is what the CAFR is reflecting. The CAFR can be full of money for any given city. The city itself can say, we have no money. We have no money to fix the roads. Look at our potholes. We have to charge you more for parking tickets. Because that is all what I call the chump change. The operating budget is different from the CAFR. The CAFR is a fund that has all the grant money lined up in it to be used expressly for the projects that the grants have been paid for, to execute those projects, to perform them to the letter per the contract.
I see. So grants.gov is really the place where people can look at this when we're talking about America. On the side, it says grants.gov is your place to find and apply for federal grants. The United States Department of Health and Human Services is proud to be the managing partner for grants.gov. So you can look for grants that are offered by 26 federal grant-making agencies. And it's just a huge database where you can look at different kinds of classifications of eligibility, like if you're a city or a township government, if you're a county government, if you're an independent school district, or even individuals, even Native American tribal governments. It's all kinds of stuff that you can filter and look for to find something. DARPA was like offering a grant for someone who wanted to build like an atomic clock, for example. And I guess one of the questions when I looked at this was that there's probably some kind of interface here where you have people whatever they're tied to, if they're a city or a county or small local government or something or school district, that go on this website and basically do searches, and then they apply to get the grant, right? And then they probably have some kind of selection process, the government, where they say, ah, this seems like a good school for this or whatever, and then they offer them the grant. But I wonder what the interface is there, how they, you know, how they get to know that this is that they want to apply for. But you're saying that this is a money-making machine for the incorporated government or township or whatever we're talking about. Is that correct?
Yeah, what I'm saying, and a lot of this I learned from the person who does the website, anticorruptionsociety.com, and you can find and track a lot of these materials on that website, the whole incorporation of the United States. So we have commercial government. That's all we have. We don't have representative government. We have commercial government with a bunch of corporations under it that only do commerce. So what I learned was that there are proposals written by somebody in the city, by an official in the city, based on these materials that are offered by that, for instance, grants.gov, or there may be liaisons who come directly from the federal government, approach certain cities with ideas, offers of contract, and the city manager usually summarizes for the city council what these projects are. Let's call them programs and projects that are paid for by federal grants. So the city council votes on them. They haven't read anything. They just heard about it. So anybody can describe anything in any way. And when you look at the materials at these city council hearings for Agenda 21, roads and apartment buildings, they're all about green and progressive. So as you can imagine, these projects are described in the most glowing terms, most likely. And then the city council gets all wrapped and excited. They vote on it. The city manager signs on it. The money comes into the city, and suddenly everybody feels great because they're going to put this whatever it is in, and they're going to really look good, and they're going to become a tourism, you know, a destination in America. They'll be known for the prototype that, for instance, Fullerton, California is the experimental city for Wi-Fi in the schools. I know someone who's fighting that, you know, to the death. Mm-hmm. And he spends all his evenings at city council hearings. And I explained the corporate government thing to him. I said, this all came in by grant. It's now too late to do much about it. And you've got to educate your city council members about this corporate government that they're in, if they don't already know it, and about the fact that the dangers of Wi-Fi, et cetera. But with the corporate structure in place, it's very hard to approach these people as human beings, because now they're corporate officers. They're bound to the corporation and they're protected by it, you see. Because corporations have any number of defenses. They have a battery of legal ability against you. They're a whole different kind of entity, and they cannot be punished. They cannot be harmed except through money.
Hmm. All right. Yep. I see. Now, so you can even, for example, on the site, type in refugees as a key search word, you know, and you get actually a number of these funding opportunity numbers that are listed that are clickable links and that you can go into. And there's, you know, titles for these opportunities like notice of funding opportunity for NGO programs benefiting refugees and other vulnerable populations in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Central Asia. You know, so I haven't gone through all of these. There's, as I said, tons of different kinds of grants, you know, kind of given here. But, okay, is there anything we need to kind of talk about when it comes to the incorporation or the corporate government in any way before we kind of move on and talk about how the immigration issue kind of fits into all of this?
Yeah, let's talk about school shootings, shall we?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Because we've seen those pop up all across America. I mean, it's a little bit hard to believe how many of these shootings there are. So there are militarization grants. And cities and towns, police departments, sheriff's departments, they're all offered grants to militarize. Would you like to have a SWAT team? Would you like to have a tank? And so they all say yes, yes, yes. And the militarization grants, in order to receive the money, keep the money, and qualify for more money, which is called upgrades, cities and towns have to do drills. So FEMA and DHS very conveniently help them with these militarization exercises, one of which was Sandy Hook, one of which was the Oregon shooting, Umpqua College, this little community college nobody ever heard of, with about 3,000 day students. It received a $2.1 million federal grant to host a police academy. So
really?
Then it has an exercise. Then we're told that here and there, some of these exercises, oh, it went live. And so these capstone events, which is the name that, you know, we have to now realize is what Sandy Hook was. These integrated capstone events are militarization exercises paid for by corporate grants. And cities and towns across America applied for this, which is why you're seeing all these shootings.
Okay, so let's detail that a bit more. So a grant is sought after to get something, an upgrade for the police department or whatever it might be. And is it a prerequisite as part of the grant that says, okay, if you're going to do that, you have to have a drill? Or is it the other way around, right? So that a drill and then that drill going live is the incentive for you to get the upgrade that the grant enables, if you see what I'm saying.
It starts with the offer to militarize through grant, you know, the payment of a grant.
Mm-hmm.
And the acceptance of that contract, and then you've got to train people how to do this. So they're trying to bring in a police state, are they not? Of course.
Yep, I would agree
so
with that.
Let's look at the example of a drug raid. You have heard of all these SWAT teams breaking down the doors of innocent people's apartments who are just babysitting their children, you know, the babysitter or the grandmother, and they just ransack the place, tear it to pieces, and then they scratch their heads and they go, oh, well, we came to the wrong place. There is a drug den somewhere on this street, but it's not here. And they leave. So when they do these drills, this is part of their training. And when they get a hit, a drug hit, this is when they fabricate the evidence. For instance, the Dortch case, the famous Dortch case that you did a couple of interviews on. Dortch family were the target of a SWAT drill, a militarization drill, which wasn't even a proper SWAT team. Apparently, some bodybuilder, Mr. Temecula, was on that SWAT team. So they were doing a raid, a practice raid. And then they fabricated evidence of Dr. Dortch having a meth lab in his bedroom. And when they get a drug hit, then they can turn around and say to the agencies above them, oh, well, you know, we look what this respectable optometrist was doing in his house. He undoubtedly represents untold numbers of other people that are conducting illicit activities that are a danger to society. We need more money. We need to have more training. We need to go after these people. So they are vilifying, making us look like villains and you know, thugs, and thereby asking for and getting more money to have tanks and equipment. They want to disarm us, and they want to arm themselves. So this is a separation, how commercial activity can actually build a government stronger than the people.
Yeah, okay, so it would be kind of a scenario of like a department of some kind is, you know, creating more crime, or let's say something mundane as breaking windows or something to get to show to the government that, well, this is happening, so we need an increase in funding to be able to expand our department to both repair all this and also stop this criminality, right?
Right. So little Zach Dortch, 12 years old, who was writing graffiti, this is how it all started. The city decided to call his graffiti tagging. They elevated its importance. Tagging is gang related. So then they say, well, now we must have a gang here. We have to go find that gang. We need to have money to do so. We need more able bodies with better training. So when they can invent scenarios and then present them as, you know, dangers to the society they're supposedly protecting, then they can get more money and more equipment. And that's how the ball gets rolling. And the money is simply borrowed by the government and then funneled down the pike to whoever qualifies for it.
Right. Okay. Well, that's interesting, because that would obviously put that case in context. I think we've spoken about this before. We speculated what's the reason, why were they targeted or whatever, but obviously, again, that doesn't mean that there aren't, you know, any guilty people out there, but it also means that there's a lot of innocent people that are subjected to things which is basically just a bureaucratic measure, because someone has probably been sitting and looking at this case and on paper, right, and saying, this looks like a good candidate. Let's elevate this. Let's bring this, you know, up to the next level as an incentivizing factor for us being given more resources next year or something, right?
Right. And so, Henrik, anybody on the local level can seek more funding, look good in his department by making such a case and arranging the evidence accordingly, the evidence for the need for more funding.
Right, yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So this can happen to anyone at any time, because in this world of commerce, money talks. And I have said to friends, as I've been, you know, poking through all this and really trying to understand how it lines up around me, listen, if we made the money, you and I and all of our favorite, you know, guests and friends and people with websites, and if we had the ability to digitally create money and we were in the position to pay it down the pike to everybody who wanted to receive it, well, we could change the world. It wouldn't even take that long. But the vision of the New World Order, the fascist world, the Agenda 21, population swapping, the technocracy of everything, the technologization of everything, the integration of man with machine, all of this is being paid for with money that's borrowed, that's just created, and that's just funneled down to all of us. You see, this is the reality. We sit here and we salivate over federal contracts, grant money from the federal government, because it's plentiful. It's a river that never stops flowing. And when you have government contracts, you're set. Now you can buy a big car. Now you can send your kids to college. You'll build anything they want you to. I know people like this.
Right, exactly. Well, a couple more questions on this. In terms of the drills there, then, one of the questions that I had, and you might not have this answer, of course, but okay, you have to have someone who make the decision to take that drill live, right? That would reasonably mean that it would be someone within the city or the county government, the school district, whoever is actually part of requesting the grant, of saying, okay, let's take it to the next level, or is it just that it happens to be on the top level of those that arranged the drill that are deciding to do this? That's a big question I have, but it might be difficult to answer that.
Well, when you look at the way that the capstone drills are organized, I explained this in the video Unraveling Sandy Hook. They are integrated capstone events are like a pyramid, okay? So, you know, on your dollar bills, you've got that all-seeing eye at the top of the pyramid. That's the capstone, that triangle at the top of the pyramid. So the reason it's called a capstone event is because the all-seeing eyes are at the top of the capstone. And each resource team that they use, the resource teams are all, this is why it's called an integrated capstone event, because they use the police, they use the media, they use the hospitals, they use the people in the facility where the event, the training exercise is taking place. They'll have extras that they hire. So in each resource team that's organized into and participates in this event, that's also a pyramid, each team. Each team has a pyramidal structure and a capstone at the top, and only the people at the top know what's going to happen. And you're supposed to act with real-time documentation using your training. This is what training is. Training is use your experience, use your knowledge. Now we're going to do an as-if situation, and then you have to act to the best of your training and knowledge. Some of these people have signed contracts. They may all be bound by corporate contracts to an event like this. We've got FEMA drill schedules. There's contracts that they offer that are all on. If you start researching Sandy Hook, you will find them. They're all now posted online. Fetzer, Jim Fetzer, has done a lot of work on this. It's in his book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. Anyway, so the point is that only the people at the top of each resource team, which would be hospital, media, coroner's office, for instance, only they know what's really going on. And everybody else in the resource team in this integrated event has to act per their training and experience.
Right. Okay. Let's talk a moment about who creates the grant then, right? Because that's done by the government, someone within the government. They want to have a change implemented in society, even if it's just on a small scale. You know, they do, it's a tippy toe tactic. Instead of reforming all of society at once and saying this is what you should have, you, I would suspect, give a financial incentive for people to voluntarily do it and also make a little bit of money. If you look at the grant's website, they're, you know, overhead award ceilings that are like, you know, $1.5 million. And, you know, it's way above that and way below that too, depending on what kind of grant you look at. But my point is, someone obviously within the government is creating this, right? To say, okay, these are the kinds of changes we have. And then, but the bank is there, the bank system is there ready to kind of back that up and provide the money for that. Is that how it works?
Well, Henrik, you're asking me as if I truly know.
I know. I have to try, right?
No, of course. I'm only going to use my common sense and I'll make an informed guess that there are some ones who have a vision for how the world needs to look, right?
Yeah, that would be kind of...
Okay, so yeah. Let's say the designers of Humanity 2.0, the designers of the new world, which is all going to be integrated, raceless people, dumb as rocks, but happy as larks, who are addicted to machines, dependent on them, work, as we've discussed in previous shows, whose biology serves technology, right?
Yeah.
But in order to make that happen, you have to do it in phases. You have to do it gradually. And if you want to get anything done, you've got to pay for it. You've got to pay money. Everybody wants money. That's the other problem. We're all addicted to fiat money. We want it. We're never going to save up our cans of beans and trade our neighbor for some, you know, whatever, tomatoes. We're going to do it through money because it's easier. So maybe the day will come and we'll have to do it that way, barter. But right now, we are all about money, all of us. So money is then, they figure out money. When you talk about those low and high ceilings, there are probably ways to get X done in such and such city for this amount of money. If you want to do X in another place, it might cost a lot more money. So they have to figure out what's the most effective way to scatter this new world that they're trying to build, to spread it evenly across the land, to get it implemented in stages and then start filling in the areas in between. So I believe that what's happening is somebody has a vision. It's not one person. It might be, I don't know, somebody at the top of the world capstone has visions for how to get the world the way they want it. And they've just designed a system of federal grants that each government of each country is some kind of, has a capstone committee itself. And they are the ones who borrow from the New World Bank Order bankers, and they just push it down the pyramid to the different towns and cities, and slowly the shape of our society completely changes. And the people who are all at the bottom, who are the ones who have to live this stuff out, they may object. But you see, the thing I'm trying to make very clear here is they don't have a voice. As of 1871 in America, that their voice went dead. Now this commercial government doesn't give a damn about the people. It only exists to do contracts and borrow money and interact through money.
Yeah, well, that's clear. They've given up on taking care of our interests a long time ago. Yeah. Okay, so let's put this in context now of immigration, right? There's two components of this. One, okay, if they're trying to create a peaceful Agenda 21, docile, GMO, soy patty, gender neutral individual, right? Then, you know, bringing massive amounts of these immigrants into our society seems to have a bit of a different effect, right? I mean, it's chaos, it's crime, there's rapes, there's all kinds of things. How does that, what we're seeing now happening as a consequence of immigration, fit into this picture, do you think?
Well, the legal system is the Siamese twin of the commerce system. It is a commercial system itself. So objections then can be punished by legal means. So we've got cultural exchanges happening in Europe that are unprecedented.
It's a nice way of saying it, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. And you've got, you know, we had a hypersexualization of Northern Europe. It also went on in Southern Europe. I vacationed in Spain one year and I was absolutely horrified at how many women were topless on the beach. I mean, there was like, I was the only one who wasn't. So this topless beaches, the, you know, liberal sex, the porn all over Northern Europe, the dressing of women in mini skirts with cleavage and, I mean, this harlot look that's even in America. You go to the supermarket and people are, they might as well just wear their underwear. They might as well not even wear anything. So this is happening in our culture. Then you bring in people from extremely rigid, repressive, religion-dominated cultures. And you bring in the young men from Muslim countries, and they haven't seen this. Their women are in burqas, you know. They have a very different way of living with a whole different moral code. And you prompt them, and that's being done by grants as well, in their own lands, you tell them how there's all this welcoming committees in Sweden and Germany, and there's a big old, you know, caravan system through the Balkans, and they will get free cell phones, and they will go to these countries, and there's work, and they will be integrated. I mean, all that is being paid for by grants. And then they arrive there, and they've also been told that the women in Sweden, you know, don't, their men are castrated effectively, they're not male, they're not virile, and the women are dying for the virility of real men. So you plunk these guys down, and through these Twitter revolution, that's what it is. That's what the smartphone system is all about. You just propagandize them, set them free. They see women dressed in clothing that in their country means, yeah, you want to have sex. So you get a rape culture going. And then you have a legal system that does nothing about it, because the legal system protects the new vision of the world.
Right.
And the newcomers.
Yeah. Yeah, we had, by the way, I don't know if people saw it on our website, we had a story about these various bots, and it kind of just goes into what you're saying, that they called it Twitter lurking, right? But they were basically someone out of Russia who developed a content analysis system for Twitter, studied about over 19,000 refugee-related tweets, original tweets, so no retweets or anything like that, and which showed that the vast majority of them came out of, well, they mentioned Germany and Austria as some of the most, you know, refugee-welcoming countries in Europe, and it was these bots, he traced them back to who's done it and stuff like that, and so it was interesting because it was almost like if someone had developed an algorithm with these different bots behind the scenes, they were working in unison with everything else that you're talking about, that they were like, you know, indicating, okay, go here or do this or, you know, blah, blah, blah. And there was even these handbooks found too with maps and what organizations to contact along the way. And, you know, so it's very, this has been very, very organized. That's my point.
Right. And has anyone heard of the billionaire, maybe he's a trillionaire, Carlos Slim from Mexico?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Right. Well, so he is one of the people who's provided all those smartphones for all those young, able-bodied Muslim men coming into Europe. And he owns all these telecom companies and interests. He's like, you know, dealt with Time Warner Cable. And I mean, the media, he's a media mogul. So this is all in the realm of media. When you start moving populations and informing them in certain very strategic ways, and then you let them loose on one another. The porn industry was a media industry. Changing the sociocultural, the ethics and philosophies and lifestyles of people in Europe who were, I mean, at one time there was great dignity and reserve. That Scandinavians were supposedly reserved, you know, this is what I heard. Yeah. And I lived there. They were that way. The older generation was. The younger generation was out in the streets drinking, puking, and having sex.
Yeah. Cultural Marxism, degeneracy, it's been rampant since the 60s, 70s in Sweden. Yeah.
Right. So when you put those two very different cultures with one another, there's a reason that there's more trouble with Pakistanis in England than there are with Indians, because Hindus don't have quite the same element of moral repression and punitive moral repression that Muslims have. So that I've talked to people in England. I have friends who live there who've observed all this. The Hindus from India are able to integrate and assimilate a lot more cooperatively than the Muslims from Pakistan. And they are bringing in all these aunties and grandmothers and these people from the most rural parts of Pakistan, the poorest people, and moving them into cities in the UK where they completely segregate and they have their own shops. They're out for clothing and spices and meat and this and that. They don't mix. They don't even ever learn English, a lot of them. So yeah. What is that all about? That is not about integration. That's about creating separate cultures that are going to attack one another one day.
So that's the incentivizing factor that leads to criminality, crime, rapes, which is, of course... Well, okay. Well, it depends on at what stage the government comes into this to interact, because currently it seems that there's almost like a hands-off kind of thing, right? We had a story coming out of Sweden a while back, Code 291, where basically all the crimes that are related to immigrants or refugees are stamped with like a secrecy code, which basically states don't talk about it, don't bring any attention to it, don't say anything at all, right? Which implies they're just trying to cover it up, not bring attention to it. So that in itself is not to create antagonism between us and them. I know that there's different things happening in different countries here, but that's one example of what they're doing. And that's, you know, so obviously that specific case is not something, at least at this stage, that is going to lead to more conflict between us and them, right?
Well, Henrik, I believe that they are conducting different social and population experiments in different countries. This has all been planned. They have studied the cultures, the extant cultures in all the countries to figure out what will create a possible effect if we combine them here, what possible effect will be created there. And this, as I said with Sandy Hook, it wasn't over after the Capstone event. There's an ongoing observational process, which is a very high value to the designers of the New World. And they're watching how the public reacts. So, as you said, there are different things going on in different countries. And in some countries, for instance, I think in Europe, Sweden is what I meant to say. They intend to replace the white Nordic Swedes with some kind of multicultural African or Muslim hybrid. And that's, Sweden started perhaps even earlier than anywhere else.
Yeah, 70, it's about around the same time as the Immigration Act in America and all that stuff, really kicking into high gear in 1975 when the government decided to that Sweden was going to be a multicultural society and that whoever came in didn't have to integrate or whatever. But obviously there's different stages to this, right? So even if they're doing something now, that doesn't mean that that's what they're intending to do at the end game of this. I think that, you know, to make a separation here, I think what we're seeing now is probably most likely to try to coax out a violent counter reaction, which of course I completely understand. It's absolutely valid. I have nothing against it. In fact, we have to fight back, right? We have to try to do something against this. But if there is a kind of an idea from the government, from the authorities' point of view, to try to, or whoever really is, you know, masterminding this behind the scenes, that they want to try to create conditions that are so unbalanced that the population itself tries to do something about this. And then, of course, you can have, with an increase in militarization of police and even military deployment against the native population, you can have the government turn on those people, effectively taking those out of the equation altogether. And who knows, maybe 200 years from now, they're seeking to, as you say, create this kind of peaceful hybrid that basically is going to be the resolution to these tumultuous, conflict-ridden times that we're in right now.
Right. And I believe they'll use the legal system to shape the future outcomes. When people try to resist, the authorities will yank them into court, prison, trial, whatever, and then cases will be decided, and those cases will constitute legal precedents, which will then be called on and relied on in future cases. And so this is what I mean when I say that the legal system is a twin of this commercial government, because the legal system is commercial also.
Right. Okay, another point here that we need to mention as well is there is also a huge industry arising around this now, where people who have, you know, businesses and hotel chains, or even like campers and trailer parks and you know, camping grounds and these kinds of things, are actually making tons of money by the government to give the incoming population, if you will, somewhere to stay. And there's other, you know, services that are given to the incoming invaders, granting them privileges basically that for free. That of course we as the natives have to fight to get in Sweden. Again, this is a, you know, it's called the immigrant or the migrant industry, and services that was, for example, supposed to be rendered by the government to our elderly have now stopped working altogether. And as I said, they're spending like 14 times the defense budget to afford just what happened now in 2015. So tons and tons and tons of money is in this game.
Right. And remember, the money is only good as long as somebody accepts it. So when you read articles, as I have, about landlords in European countries taking huge sums of money, like one landlord might receive 2 million euros a year from the government to house migrants. And it's in his interest, if he likes money and wants it, to do that for the government and ignore the fact that he may have had an apartment complex that was assisted living for the elderly. So again, if people accept the money, that's us. That's us. Then right, all this happens.
Yeah, we agree to it. But many people agree to it. They play into it. They're happy to line their own, line their own pockets, basically, while the rest of us suffers and are squeezed out and displaced and creating these horrible conditions. Now, one of the other things, and I think we should get into that in the second segment here as we take a break in a little bit, but that's that aspect of, you know, kind of the Agenda 21 world, the future that they have planned beyond this. I think there's some more things I want to ask you about when it comes to immigration as well, or what they're planning to do, but there's a whole lot more there. But let's save that for the second segment and kind of take a short break here, Sophia. I think this is a good place to do it. And I know that you've written about this too, by the way, in some of your newsletters that you write, what is it, on a monthly basis that people, you offer subscribers, right?
Yes, thank you. I have a little newsletter. It's a personal newsletter. It is not news, not news. It's my style of connecting dots. It's 6 pages, single space. It goes out by hard copy in the mail. And it's a, you have to do a donation of $50 a year. You will see newsletters on my website, aboutthesky.com. Quick way to get to my website is to do sophiasmallstorm.com. That takes you to my blog page. And from there, you can find podcasts, newsletter. So I have some sample newsletters posted. If they interest you and you want to subscribe, all you need to do is send me an email through the website saying that you had that interest. And I do trip across things and connect them in my own way in these newsletters. And I sent Henrik a bunch of them about this immigration issue, which he was kind enough to read so that we could do this show. Yeah, and there's so much more to say. I have kind of got a theory of what they're going to do with the white populations of Europe in the next phase of this population swap. So we can save that for the second hour. And I also have a store, avatarproducts.com, where I share the things that I've discovered that helped me get into middle age. Yeah, because that's where I am now. You know, when you wake up when you've turned 50 and your fingers hurt and you say, what's this? Am I going to only get more of this? So I have things like iodine, magnesium cream, little inexpensive, but very very effective ways of dealing with your body. I call it body remediation.
All right. Well, very good. Definitely check that out. Yeah, that's good to have, by the way. Definitely keep up on. And it's amazing with some of those, what supplementation, nutrition, and various things actually can do for you. I obviously, I don't have to tell you how toxified people are today and how much load they carry and everything else. And no wonder they're actually, some cases I'm surprised people even walk, you know, considering like the diet that they're on and all the garbage that they're putting in their body and whatnot, or and on their body. But yeah, that's, it's good that you offer that.
Yes. And Henrik, I concentrate on ways that are very elemental. Iodine is an element in the periodic table. It is not a complex formula. It doesn't cost a lot. But if you supplement with iodine, it completely changes your body. Same with magnesium. And actually, I have a theory about why people can barely walk. There is a hierarchy in the body in terms of the, its different systems. So the body will sacrifice its musculoskeletal system, its skin, in order to yield the nutrients and the enzymes and the minerals and the energy to the major organs to keep them going. Your body wants you to, your heart to pump and beat, your lungs to function so you can breathe, your brain to function. And you can look like crap. You can be, you know, with a walker and stumbling, but it'll sacrifice those other systems for the heart, the lungs, and the brain.
Does all right. That make sense? Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And magnesium is incredibly important for musculature and tension releaser and, you know, all kinds of things. It's really good. I do take some of that too. Okay, check out the website aboutthesky.com. Check out, or send Sophia rather an email then if you're interested in the newsletter. Some great stuff in there, and we've just tried to kind of get to some of the things really that she took up or wrote about in her newsletter in terms of the, you know, the legal aspect, how things are connected in terms of the grants and the CAFRs and that kind of issue, and of course tying that into immigration. But we'll continue the story in the second segment, so stay with us everybody, we'll be right back. And we'll continue with more. We'll be right back.
Where am I? In the village. What do you want? Information. Whose side are you on? That would be telling. We want information.
Information. Information.
You won't get it. By hook or by crook, we will. Who are you? The new number two.
Who is number one?
You are number six.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Okay, folks, if you want to hear more of this program, redicemembers.com is the website. Go there to subscribe, and then you can stream or download any of our shows in full. Also, of course, don't forget, if you're new to the show, our free archive, including news and other resources and material, is available on redicecreations.com. We have RSS feeds on both sites. Don't forget to subscribe to those. We have more to talk about with Sofia, and we'll continue to press deeper into the issues of grants and also how Agenda 21 fits into this picture. There are changes all over the Western world, and immigration is a big part of it. The other big change is how people live and what they own, and how it's designed and structured by the utilitarian engineers that are employed on behalf of the hostile elites. Tune in at redicemembers.com for the second hour with Sofia Smallstorm coming up right now. By the way, several good shows in the pipeline. Please see our upcoming guest list in the radio archive for much more. For now, we say thank you for listening. Stay tuned. Second hour coming up.